Welcome to Survivor Shoals. I'm so excited we have our special guest here. Can you please introduce yourself?
Absolutely. My name is Alfonso Nathan. I am a licensed Black mental health therapist. I'm the co-owner of Brightside Medical Associates, and I'm on the front lines of trying to tackle this mental health pandemic that we're facing in the U.S. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. My goodness, you are powerful. All that you're doing.
Yeah.
Now, how did you get into mental health in general? What made you go into this field?
Absolutely. Well, this is a quote by this famous artist called Pablo Picasso. And he said, "The meaning of life is to find your gift, but the purpose of life is to give that gift away." Mm-hmm. And from early on, I was a great advice giver. I was great at listening and just had good energy. And so I had to find out. So I found my gift really, really early. And I just had to find out what I need to do to give it away.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Wow. So going into mental health, did you have your own personal story to bring you into it? Now, we know that you were a good listener and you were already gifted and God pushed you, propels you into this field for a purpose.
Absolutely.
But is there even a background story even more behind this?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I'm a big believer that interventions change lives. I went to this boarding school for underprivileged youth called the Milton Hershey School. And it was a opportunity that changed my life dramatically. I was from Staten Island, New York, in the 90s. I don't know if you've heard of Shaolin, but the Wu-Tang, that's where I lived and that's where I tried to thrive. But I couldn't thrive there because I had a lot of potential, but the education system and just the environment around me did not allow me to really flourish. So I was able at the eighth grade level to go to this boarding school, which was a huge culture shock, you know, living in just the concrete jungle to just now going to the farmland and really being able to try to figure out what I needed to do with life.
Wow, so, my goodness. Now, I've heard so many great things about the Milton Hershey School.
Yeah,
tell us about the layout. What does it look like?
Well, it's a really amazing campus. I don't think there's any college campus or any other campus that's really as beautiful as that, because the school itself is worth right now $10
billion. My goodness.
So it's one of the richest schools in the U.S. It smells like chocolate when I first went there. So it was a nice little dream. I'm like, oh, it smells like chocolate and this is going to be a great thing. But then when you get there, it's like, oh man, I'm really here. It's silent. The chocolate doesn't, you know, smells, you know, you get tired of that chocolate smell after a while. So it was a big culture shock from just being in the city, then going into the countryside.
Wow. So you're in a situation now from, like you said, the concrete jungle. Mm-hmm. You're in this beautiful campus now. It's mm-hmm. full of farmland, full of prosperity, basically, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so now you're in it, basically jolted into something so new.
Mm-hmm.
How are you taking all of that in at such an early age?
Well, it took a while because it was a culture shock. So the good part was I had some family members that were there. I come from a Liberian background, and a lot of the Liberian community in New York actually knew about the school. So I actually had about two or three cousins there. So it was really helpful to see some familiar faces. But again, you know, the first, I would say, year, it just took a while to just adjust. Having to do chores early in the morning, having to smell the fresh air. Like I realized I had some allergies and I'm like, why am I sneezing? What's all this fresh air going on? So it was a big change. It was a big difference.
It sounds like though you've really adapted to it. So your first year there was a little rocky, but
Absolutely.
You made it through.
Absolutely.
So throughout this, now what, you stayed there for how many years?
From eighth grade till I graduated. So 5 years.
5 years. Mm-hmm. My goodness. And you live there at the sporting school.
Absolutely.
So I'm sure you made some lifelong friends from that.
Yeah, the thing is, when you go to a facility like that, a school like that, let me correct myself, you have a bond with other individuals that went there, because no one really knows how that experience is unless you went there. So, you know, my friends who I grew up with, they're like my brothers now. My brothers and my sisters now. So it's a really strong fraternity.
It's beautiful.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes, yes. So were there some difficulties while you were in the school beyond the first year? Were there some other trying situations that kind of brought you into going to mental health, to into therapy in general? Or was it just something to where it's like you said, you were gifted and young and you knew what you wanted to do kind of early on?
Absolutely. So not many life-changing difficulties from going there, just from just me knowing that I had to make a difference, I had to make a change. You know, being in poverty in New York, you know, to an overabundance, it gave me that drive and that hunger of knowing like I need to be able to continue this. A lot of times when people, you know, go through poverty, they have this survival mindset and it continues throughout life. And that's when we have this hustle culture where we're trying to always get it because we don't want to feel like we felt when we didn't have it. So sometimes that overdo makes you overwork, makes you, you know, overbook. So I had to balance that. But, you know, the adjustment piece, that's been an adjustment all my life, but that allowed me to be able to deal with, you know, how to adjust, you know, later on. And that's, you know, one of the things I definitely want to talk about, you know, with the birth of my daughter.
Wow.
Yeah.
So now you graduated Hershey.
Yeah.
You have this amazing new vision of your life now.
Absolutely.
Because you basically transitioned from seeing poverty around you to now seeing abundance.
Yeah.
So you know that it's for you.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
You've now taken the bull by the horns and life is really progressing in such a beautiful way. You got married, of course, right?
Yes, yes, yes. And to my beautiful black queen, Larissa Nathan Shah.
Absolutely. And also now you have your father. So now you were talking about the birth of your daughter. How was that? How did that feel to now you're responsible for a life?
Yeah, well, the thing is, my daughter was a very difficult pregnancy. Mm. And my wife delivered her and she was 12 pounds. So anybody who knows about delivering, that was a really big baby. And the hard part about that is that we didn't know she was that big. And that's the hard part. That's the scary part about the healthcare system. They felt like they did not give my wife the right treatment and they kind of just overlooked some of these signs of having a really big baby. They just said, you know, she was, you know, going to be healthy, right size. There was a lot of amniotic fluid. So I'm like, okay, that's no problem. And it wasn't until the delivery room were like, push, push, push. And I see this huge head. And I'm like, that baby looks like a toddler. I'm like, oh, snap. Something's wrong.
Right.
And that was the first moment I felt powerless. Mm-hmm. Because throughout my life, whenever there's something happens, I can be able to deal with it. I can be able to have a solution for it because people come to me for solutions. This one, I had no solution because I'm a medical doctor. So this is out my lane. So I had to step back and allow, you know, 12, 13 nurses to come hold her down to try to get the baby out. And I'm just sitting there just watching. And it was probably one of the most humbling experiences I've ever faced. She was delivered. She came out unconscious. And she was unconscious for a good, you know, minute. They were reviving her. My wife was like, what's going on? I'm like, listen, don't worry. She's good. They finally revived her. Then carted her off. And we were just left, like, dumbfounded. What is going on?
Right.
And, you know, me trying to comfort my wife, she's like, where is she? Is she okay? For a good hour, we didn't know if she was alive or not. And the doctor came back and said, hey, we revived her. We were just doing some tests, but there is going to be, there may be a chance of brain damage.
Oh no.
Because of the amount of time she was, didn't have oxygen. So that hit very hard because, you know, me being in the mental health field, I see everything. I see the effects of brain damage. I see the effects of just difficult births. So I'm thinking, is my baby gonna be in a wheelchair? Is my baby gonna, you know, be able to, you know, get up and talk and laugh and do these things? And we, for a good portion of time, we were just waiting. And so they carted her off to CHOP, Children's Hospital. Left us there. We were in Einstein Hospital, and they just carted her off. And they just said, well, we'll keep you posted. So we weren't even able to really hold our child. And then I had to drive down there to CHOP to see what's going on. And, you know, for a good, you know, 2 weeks, we were, you know, she was in the intensive NICU, that NICU, and we just didn't know. We just didn't know what was going on, if she was going to be responsive or not. And again, I felt very powerless.
Right.
And, you know, for me, a person that problem solved, it was just a difficult feeling. You know, people came to me and just asked me, you know, what's going on? Is everything okay? And, you know, I'm a big follower of the faith of God, of Christ. And, you know, that was when I had to really pray and give that power up to God, because I had no power over it. So my wife is in the medical field. She's a registered nurse. My mother-in-law is a nurse practitioner. So it was good to be able to bounce some ideas off with them to the doctors, because how the doctors initially came to us, they felt that we weren't educated, and they felt that it was, you know, we did not have the proper terminology to really talk with us. And it was very dismissive. And one pet peeve of mine is whenever somebody tries to dismiss me, because I have a lot of degrees and I have a lot of education experience, and that's something you would never take from me. So after we told the doctors about themselves and let them know who we are, and we were able to come to agreement in knowing that, you know, you need to address us accordingly.
Right.
And it was a really tough situation.
It sounds like a tough situation. Yeah. And just the fact that you were treated in that way, mm-hmm. by the doctors that are supposed to be caring for you, mm-hmm. and your wife, it's one of those things that you hear, unfortunately, so often.
Absolutely.
When it comes down to the medical field.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you ask yourself, why is that happening? Why is it that, mm-hmm. we're, you know, people of color are being dismissed, mm-hmm. when they're having these different concerns, and they're just, you know, told anything,
yeah.
as opposed to what's really going on?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, the medical field initially wasn't for us. I mean, you know, even in the medical books, maybe 50 years ago, there was thought that Black people didn't have as much nerve endings as white people, so we could take pain more.
Right.
And that's, some doctors still believe that. So that mindset, brought some of this negligence. And that's why I'm a big believer of representation. Representation matters so much, because, you know, if there was some representation, you know, a lot of these things wouldn't have happened.
Right.
As the weeks went on, you know, we were just, you know, praying, and we were just working through the process of trying to figure out what's going on. She had to get a couple of MRIs. She had a couple of seizures in there. They thought that she had meningitis. It was a really difficult 3 weeks. Then finally, after the last MRI came, it showed that she had no brain damage.
Thank goodness.
Which was a huge relief. And, you know, it was a weight lifted off of me, because, you know, my thought of me with my daughter was just her in a wheelchair. And, you know, I was going to be with her. I was
That's
like, okay,
right.
We're going to do Special Olympics. You're going to be the flyest, you know what I mean, girl ever. You know, I was ready for it. So it was a great reliever from that. And she was in the NICU for a couple weeks longer, and then we were able to take her home. And it was, you know, one of the best feelings, because, you know, every time around this time, it's Father's Day coming up.
Yes.
It's very special for me, just because of, you know, that situation. But that wasn't the end of it.
Oh my goodness.
No. Then I would say a couple months later, we started noticing she was imbalanced. Like she was sitting up and then she was falling back down. There was very much of an imbalance, and I'm trying to figure out what's going on. And you know, because you know, my wife examines her all the time, just because that's her background, she was like, something's not right. And we started noticing that her eyes started to flutter. And we were like, what's going on? Like, we're thinking, okay, maybe is it brain damage again? Like, or, you know, she's, you know, she was on seizure medication. Is she having seizures? So we went to the hospital. Hospital was like, you know, we don't see anything. Everything's fine. And sent us back. We're like, nah, we're not. I'm not going to just believe that because I see it. So, you know, we went again, and then we went to a neuro-ophthalmologist, which is just, you know, a eye doctor that also deals with the brain. And he said, you know, let's do some tests to see what is going on, because I think I have a couple ideas, but I don't want to let you guys know it yet. And we'll run some tests and we'll see what's going on. So we did that. Then 2 weeks later, the night of my birthday, I look on the CHOP website and it said new patient appointment for oncology. And that's, oncology is a medical term for cancer. So I found out on my birthday at nighttime that my daughter had cancer.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it was, again, another, you know, humbling situation.
And thank goodness you went to get a second opinion. You were told initially that nothing was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And had you not taken that initiative to bring your daughter to the neurologist,
mm-hmm.
you wouldn't have known what's going on.
Absolutely.
My goodness. Mm-hmm. And what happened after that?
Well, squeaky wheel gets the oil. That's
yes.
That's why we do that. So, you know, after finding out my birthday, you know, it was a very, very difficult just processing, because when you think cancer, you think, you know, it's over. And so we had the appointment, and they said that she had a neuroblastoma in her lung. So it was a tumor, a cancerous tumor in her lung, that they said, you know, if we waited maybe another 3 weeks, it was been a 25 chance survival, 75 chance of death.
Oh my gosh.
But we got it earlier on. It was a flip, 75 survival, 25 with death. So we did the surgery, and we did some you know, kind of type of chemo type of therapy for her, and she was in remission. So she's still in remission now. But that whole traumatic experience, you know, really changed my perspective on what matters in life.
Yes.
You know, because again, growing up, hustle culture, right? I'm you know, survival mindset. You know, I make a pretty good living for myself and my family. That, you know, they don't have to want for anything. But I was always trying to just get more, more and more, just to make sure we're good. And it wasn't until after that I had to really make a cognitive effort to just be present in the moment, because you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. And, you know, and that allowed me to really appreciate every single second on life, every single second that you have with your kids, with your parents, with your friends. It really made it much better.
You're able to actually feel all of your moments now.
Absolutely.
And that's a beautiful thing. Yes.
Yeah.
And look at how God just opens up these different doors for you. You don't look at them as that at the time,
yeah.
But when you think back, it's like, wow, this was all for a greater purpose.
Absolutely.
And wow, and look, and I know your daughter is thriving now.
She's thriving. That's my baby. She is. Gosh, listen, I made a promise to God that if he allowed me to keep her, I would spoil her. So it is what it is. She's just gonna be spoiled. I'm gonna have to deal with it later, but because I get to be able to spoil her, and that's what it is. And you know, this is, again, I live by quotes, because I think, you know, quotes are a great way to just capture moments. And there's a quote by Mark Twain, and he said, I'm an old man now, and most of my life has been nothing but sorrow and despair, but most of it never really happened.
It's profound.
Yeah. So what he means is, you know, a lot of the things that we're upset about, the what ifs, the what mights, what wills, never really come true.
That's right.
And we live in our head, and we live in these different scenarios that will never come to fruition, and we're just miserable. So I try to make an effort to not live in those type of scenarios. Because you can, it's very easy, especially in this world.
Yes.
It'll put you in those scenarios. But, you know, once you live through these type of situations, these traumatic situations, you know, it puts an extra just love on life.
I love that. I love that you have taken everything that you went through and really changed your life around in a way that you can actually see each moment for what it is, spend that additional time with your family. And also, like, you're able to even reach more people because, like you said, you're fighting against mental health, people not knowing that they have these mental health issues. Yeah. And now you're able to even help them in a greater light because you're able to see things even more in balance. Yeah. So how beautiful is that?
It's, you know, it's when you do your calling from what God, you know, provides for you, it's just a trajectory, you know, and you can't fight it. Everybody has a calling. Everyone has something that they're good at, that niche. It's about you just being open for it and really growing that and making sure you're investing your energy in the right things. Because, you know, this is a book I'm finishing up. I'm actually finished. It's called Not Worth My Energy. And you have to think about how much energy we waste on people and situations that really aren't worth our energy. And we have a certain amount of energy in our bodies. But it's our job to put it to things that are good investments. I mean, you put your energy in your job, you get a good return by keeping it. Put your energy in your relationships, you get a good return by growing it. And not putting your energy in things that are bad investments. Like, you know, unnecessary conversations or emotional vampires. And those people that have been negative for so long, they suck the energy from you to fuel themselves. Mm. So, you know, I'm really big with just understanding how to really invest and protect our energy.
I love that.
Thank you.
And how can people reach you? Because we need to make sure that everybody's reaching out to you because you have so much wisdom.
Absolutely. You can always go on my Instagram at Fonza Therapist, my website at FonzaTherapist.com, Brightside Counseling and Brightside Medical Associates for any type of mental health needs. I'm also part of the ACOMA Project with Dr. Alfie, Black Men Heal, which is a organization that gives free therapy for Black men, and the Boris Henson Foundation that's founded by Taraji Henson and run by Tracy Jade. You can find me in those outlets, as well as, you know, this docuseries I have coming up called Healing the Culture, where we have a sit down of a therapy session with influencers, and you could like a fly on the wall and seeing what a therapy session looks like. We have a lot of things coming up. So you're gonna, you know, always find some ways you can be able to reach me.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story, sharing so much awareness, mm-hmm. and also just giving that beautiful energy that you have. It's actually just so enlightening just to be able to have you sitting here today speaking about all the things that you spoke about. Yeah. Would you like to leave with some type of quote or could be your own or somebody else's that you'd like to share with us?
Let's see. I have a lot of them. One that I love is, a smart man learns from his own mistakes, but a wise man learns from mistakes of others. A lot of times you can be able to you can make decisions by seeing what people are doing right and doing wrong. You don't need to make that decision. And I think if we continue as a society to look at what we've done, what other people have done, and we build up off of that, I think that it will make the world a lot better.
Beautiful. Thank you again so much for being here on Survivor Shields. I so appreciate you.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
Blessings to you.
Absolutely.